The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Barbara Yakubu
and Yvonne Atileko.
In the headlines, members of parliament disappointed over management of Nsawom water treatment plant. Code of ethics for journalists on child protection launched. EU launches 6 million euro initiatives to support projects by local authorities and civil society organizations. Murderer of NP for Ebuakwa North, J.B. Dankwa Edu, remanded in prison custody. Kenya to set up special prison for violent offenders. And former French President Nicolas Sarkozy, an investigation over 2012 campaign funding. That says the summary by Yvonne.
Members of Parliament say they are disappointed about how the Ghana Water Company has handled the management of water at the Nsawom treatment plant. They expressed their concern when the Committee on Water Resources, Works and Housing paid a working visit to the area. A document guide media reportage on issues relating to children has been launched in Accra. The executive director of Child Rights International, Bryce Appiah, who spoke to Radio Ghana, the launch asked journalists to desist from posting pictures of children who have been abused or disclosed their location. The EU is to launch a 6 million euros initiative to support projects managed by local authorities and civil society organizations for job creation to promote development. The EU ambassador to Ghana, William Hanna, announced this in Sunyani at the launch of the Migration Information Center, MIC, under the Ghana Integrated Migration Management Approach project. And former French President Nicolas Sarkozy has been placed under formal investigation into his campaign funding. Mr. Sarkozy, 61, was questioned all day yesterday by magistrates before being informed he was under investigation.
TBC mastering the airwaves with nothing but quality news and programming.
The news in detail. Members of Parliament have expressed disappointment about how the Ghana Water Company has handled the management of water at the Nsawom treatment plant. Nsawom and its environs are currently battling water crisis. The MPs think had the GWCL put in place pragmatic measures, the situation would not have been so dire. They expressed concern when the Committee on Water Resources, Works and Housing paid a working visit to the area. David Oponkusi is a ranking member on the committee.
These are certain kind of people. You pay them so they work for us. You pay them because they have a certain kind of expertise. So if they thought it's necessary to make proposal to government to take a loan to do this, I would have thought that they would have done their feasibility study. This facility is to treat water. As we sit here, there's no water to be treated. It's a white elephant. I would have thought that they would have had their priorities right. First of all, as a component of the loan, they should have had enough money to dredge the catchment area, as they call it, so they will have enough. So by the time this thing, you could have been going hand in hand. They are not mutually exclusive. If you have a loan to build this, it's a different contractor. If you loan to build a different contractor, I'm sure that if they had done that, this is somebody would have been doing his work. This is somebody was not more interested in seeing this up because this is first class. This is what people can see. By the time this project was completed, we expected that the basin would have been done. No matter what, even if it's we have done some water in this area. And look at water. What they are doing, it's a joke. You have seen it for yourself. In this emergency, you are praying for rain. Once I said that these machines, there are four of them, they're really working. They have a tight set of us because it takes a small area. So you can have about 4 or 5 machines along the basin. So I'm giving myself 2 weeks to be able to do this. As you see, if you know one machine, it's not working. If it rains today, you probably come and see some water flowing. But look at the debt. In no time, we'll face the same problem. So it is not the genesis of the loan itself, but who structured the loan? What was it intended to do? Who decided that putting up this building was more important than dredging it?
Ranking member on the Committee on Water Resources, Works and Housing, David Oponkusi, an official of the Water Resources Commission, Ronald Abraham, attributed the problem to natural causes.
Currently, Koforidua hasn't got much of a problem because they are getting the interbasin water transfer they treat the water as Bukola or Osekolu, and then pump it to Koforidua. So when you get to Koforidua, the Densu is dry, but they don't have that much of a problem because they are getting rationing from the Volta treatment facility. So what we have to do to actually offset this kind of pressures is to build the infrastructure from Weja to here, because Weja also gets supplies from some rivers from the central region. So as we speak now, they have a lot of water. We could also back it up with another raw water transmission from the Volta Lake into this area. I want us to decouple the element of pollution, flotation. This is not about pollution. This is not about flotation. It's about water shortage. And it has come about as a result of the long dry spell where we are not getting water. It is also a neighborhood problem. In some other countries in Africa, they are calling for food aid. What it means is that their water got finished long ago. Zimbabwe is a handy example. Some parts of the world are wet now. France is very wet, UK is very wet, and they are experiencing floods. So I think we need to do what we call environmental engineering to do sub-basin transfers and inter-basin water transfer, and that will save us future reoccurrence of these kind of situations.
Ronald Abraham is with the Water Resources Commission. The PRO of the Ghana Water Company, Stanley Marty, appealed to the MPs to use their high offices to halt Galamsey operations as the canker is inimical to water production.
We are working at a flushing area so that when there are rains, we can impound more water and then put the facility into use. Now the second phase is the rehabilitation of the old treatment plant, and then trying to clear the catchment area so that we can impound more water. And that money has not been approved by your outfit yet. We'll entreat you that as you go to Parliament, seeing the situation now, you will expedite action on the second phase so that we can have this thing done as early as practicable. I also want to inform you that this is not the only situation happening in the country now. We are facing the same challenge in Winneba. There's some construction work going on in Winneba. We are facing the same challenge in Dawase Inti, and it's as a result of Galamsey operations. The same problem is in Bonsa, in the western region. Bonsa serves Takwa. It's also as a result of Galamsey operations. Tano in the Bonga Hafu region. So we'll also take this opportunity to let you know that Galamsey operations is really affecting water production throughout the country. It's making the cost of treatment very, very high because we have had to use more chemicals than usually we would have used.
PRO of the Ghana Water Company, Stanley Marty, the MP for Nsawam Edweju, Frank Anodom Pre, told Radio Ghana how the situation has affected the people.
The evidence is there. We're doing what we can in our own small way to assist. But I think the authorities have slept on their job. The indications were clear. So as far back last year, I asked the minister a question related to this, and he has said that everything was together. And so by December last year, we're going to be okay. Here we are. Again, the project's supposed to be two phases. Only one phase. Present before the one phase. They were supposed to continue with the second phase. They didn't continue with the second phase, notwithstanding the 11 million euro given to them by the Belgian government. The question is, what did they use that money for? Is this what they used 11 million euro for? So these are genuine concerns that we should ask ourselves. And then also, the issues about human activity. Yes, we agree, people are farming along the basin, and it's unacceptable. But the Environmental Protection Agency, they are institutions of state mandated to enforce the law. What are they doing to enforce the law? These are genuine questions we should be asking, and I think that we are not doing enough. Maybe we have to drill boreholes around so that we can have some more water. As it stands now, the water level is low. I need water. What I can, I'm doing it. I'm getting some to clinics, to hospitals, schools. That is being done on a daily basis. If I tell you the financial effect on my pocket, you'll be amazed, because you know you have common fund.
MP for Nsawam Edweju, Frank Anodom Pre.
A strategic plan that will see to the management of the Volta River Basin has been launched in Accra. The plan is aimed at assisting the VRA to focus on the development priorities of the Volta Basin while optimizing the use of available resources. The Minister for Water Resources, Works and Housing, Dr. Kwikwajiman Mensah, launching the document, said the establishment of a legal framework such as the Water Charter must be supported by member states to serve as a tool for better decision-making and integration. Joyce Jechi reports.
The Volta is a transboundary river shared by six West African countries. The basin contains four sub-basins and is served by at least three large tributaries: the White Volta, black voter and revotee. The countries sharing the results are Ghana, Benin, Burkina Faso, Cote d'Ivoire, Mali, and Togo. Recognizing the importance of coordinated management of shared natural resources, heads of state established the Voter Basin Authority, VBA. The objective is to promote permanent consultation and sustainable development of the basin and its shared related resources for equitable distribution for the development of member countries. The strategic plan is to effectively guide the activities of the VBA for 2016 to 2019. The plan should have been launched in Burkina Faso late last year, but was called off due to attacks. Dr. Charles Binley is the acting executive director of the VBA.
We need to strengthen first the capacity of the basin authority itself. We also need to lay out a legal framework for how to cooperate. Convention is only made up of principles mainly. So in order to translate those principles into a legal document that will be binding on all the countries, this legal document called the Water Charter will be ratified by all the six parliaments.
The national focal person of the VBA, Ben Ampoma, talks about the strategic plan.
All the sisters, two each, Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire, they have common problems on the black water. So we have identified measures to address those common problems. Those common problems have to do with dwindling stream flows that we are talking about, and then deforestation. Togo and Benin also have their own problems because they share the Oti, so they have come out with activities to address the problems on the Oti. Burkina Faso and Mali also share the black from resource.
The Minister for Water Resources, Works and Housing, Dr. Kwikwajima Mensah, made reference to what the SDG says about sustainable water development, including transboundary water cooperation. He said a new agenda will require that all countries act collectively, identify common challenges, set priorities, align policies, and mobilize resources for implementation.
Joyce Getchi reporting. A document to guide media reportage on issues relating to children has been launched in Accra. The Child Protection Code of Ethics for Journalists has become necessary following sensational reportage on issues of rape and child trafficking, especially by a section of electronic media and tabloids. Executive Director of Child Rights International, Bright Appiah, who spoke to Radio Ghana at the launch, asked journalists to desist from posting pictures of children who have been abused or disclose their location. Here's a report by Doreen Ampofo.
Many have raised concern about how some media houses and journalists report issues relating to children. In a bid to be the first to report, some newspapers and TV stations publish pictures exposing the face and identity of victims of rape or child trafficking. Others give very detailed accounts of what happened, while some media houses give gory pictures of the body of children who die because of maltreatment. These ads have been said to abuse the rights of the child and subject them to ridicule by their friends and people who can easily identify them. The 16-page document spells out what journalists must consider when reporting on children in order to protect their rights. The Executive Director of Child Rights International, Bright Appiah, explains further.
One of the ethical things that you need to consider is not to accept any monetary value in reporting issues about a child, because we have witnessed that in the country where children have gone through some sexual activities and they just report on them anyhow. We think that the underlying factor is that somebody has been influenced, and we think that that is against ethical standards. You need to also recognize the privacy and the dignity of the child when you are reporting, so that you don't expose the child. You don't name the child, describe where the child is and all that.
The head of the Child Protection Unit of UNICEF, Johan Eriksson, indicated that although children have the right to be heard in public, their stories must be told with dignity and respect.
When we open the newspapers, there are stories about children, the good, but also the bad. Children who have been abused, children who have been trafficked, these issues need to be brought out in the public. But when opening the pages, we also often see children's rights further being violated by the way the children and their stories are being portrayed. These children don't have to be victimized again in the TV. Everybody's watching in the evenings in their living rooms. Children have the right to have their stories heard and be told in public, but it must be done with great respect and with dignity and with the best interest of the child in mind.
The president of the Ghana Journalists Association, Roland Afelmoni, said the launch of the book is not enough to stop the abuse of children in the media. Rather, journalists must internalize the contents for the necessary impact.
There's a huge deficit in ethical discipline generally, and this deficit goes hand in hand with the surplus in ethical misconduct. The code on child reporting is therefore the right medicine at the right time to cure the ethical diseases. But a cure will not be a happenstance. It will require a conscious effort by journalists to internalize and reflect the contents of the code.
The document was compiled in consultation with GJA, National Media Commission, UNICEF, Rights to Play, and Views from Some Children.
Doreen Ampofu filed that report. This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra, the major stories. Members of Parliament disappointed over management of Nsawam Water Treatment Plant. Code of Ethics for Journalists on Child Protection launched. EU launches €6 million initiative to support projects by local authorities and civil society organizations. Murderer of MP for Ebuakwa North, J.B. Gankwa Edu, remanded in prison custody. Kenya to set up special prison for violent offenders. And former French President Nicolas Sarkozy under investigation over 2012 campaign funding.
Welcome back. The European Union, EU, is to launch a €6 million initiative to support projects jointly managed by local authorities and civil society organizations for job creation. The EU ambassador to Ghana, William Hanna, announced this in Sinyai at the launch of a migration information center under the Ghana Integrated Migration Management Approach, GIMA project. A newly constructed building was inaugurated together with a four-wheel vehicle to facilitate the operations of the center. The center will offer a neutral space for people to obtain accurate information on legal migration procedures, required documentation, procedure for obtaining legal travel documents, and information on destination countries. Mr. Hanna said priority will be given to projects implemented in the regions where a large number of people live for greener pastures abroad. He cited lack of employment opportunities, poverty, and sense of despair as some of the major drivers of irregular migration. Mr. Hanna said the essence of the initiative is to assist in addressing the root causes of irregular migration, since public awareness on the dangers alone cannot tackle the menace.
The Minority Caucus in Parliament has asked government to come clean and tell Ghanaians the whole truth about the transfer of the two Guantanamo Bay ex-detainees to the country. According to the caucus, there is too much confusion surrounding the Gitmo agreement and there are more questions than answers. Addressing a news conference in Parliament yesterday, the minority said even as the presidency tries to conceal the truth from the people, the Speaker of Parliament, Edward Duajahu, has also failed to admit urgent questions filed by five MPP MPs on the matter, thereby denying them the opportunity to scrutinize the considerations that went into accepting the detainees into Ghana. We bring you more in this report by our parliamentary correspondents Dominic Logie and Augustus Akwe.
The controversy surrounding the transfer of the two Guantanamo Bay ex-detainees, Mahmoud Omar Mohammed bin Atif and Khalil Salid Mohammed al-Dabi, to the country continues to rage on. At a news conference in Parliament, the minority caucus said the whole process is shrouded in secrecy, which in a democracy is unacceptable. The news conference was addressed by the ranking member on foreign affairs, an MP for Subin, Isaac Osei. He said President Mahama breached the constitution in entering into the agreement with the U.S. without prior approval from Parliament.
There are some, including the foreign minister, who think that the president was exercising his executive authority. It is true that Article 58.1 vests the executive authority of the state in the president. But executive authority can only be exercised in accordance with the provision of the Constitution. When power is exercised capriciously without due process, it is an usurpation of the people's rights. Our president is willing to bend over backwards to violate the immigration laws of Ghana by receiving these deportees. This is what I beg to say, that a president should not indulge in constitutional lawlessness. Both the president and the foreign minister are very familiar with Article 75.1, which gives the president the right to execute treaties, agreements, and conventions in the name of Ghana. But Article 75.2 says such treaties, agreements, or conventions executed by the president shall be subject to ratification by an act of parliament or a resolution by more than half of all parliamentarians. Ladies and gentlemen, we wish to state unequivocally that the conduct of the president in bringing in the two detainees without parliamentary approval represents a serious breach of the very constitution that he has sworn to protect and uphold.
The ranking member on the Foreign Affairs Committee, Isaac Osei, wanted answers for the following questions.
Are the two Gitmo detainees here in Ghana as free individuals, or they are still in detention? Do they have access to computers and the internet? Will their families be permitted to come and visit? Are they permitted to go and worship in the mosques? Are they permitted to go shopping in the central business district and the various malls? The president says there's no cost to government for keeping these detainees. The U.S. Embassy says it is a shared cost. Who should we believe? Who is paying for their maintenance? Who is paying for their surveillance? We understand that the goal of the Gitmo resettlement is that the detainees are afforded an opportunity to reintegrate into society. Yet they are here in Ghana for only 2 years, and then they are expected to move on. What is the exit strategy of Ghana? Where do they go, and with what travel documents? There's too much confusion surrounding answers to some of these questions. There are many more questions than answers, and the president and his foreign minister must come clean on this and tell Ghanaians the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Meanwhile, the Foreign Affairs Minister, Hannah Tete, has been billed to brief Parliament on the matter on Friday. That report was filed by our parliamentary correspondents, Dominic Noji and Augustus Akwe. A private legal practitioner, Yaopong, says when there is a breach of the Constitution, the Supreme Court may make an order of compliance, and this is spelled out in Article 69 of the Constitution. He said impeachment in the case of the President or his Vice President is a cumbersome process. Mr. Opoku was speaking on Behind the News. He said arrangements can be made, but due process must be followed. The alleged murderer of the MP for Ebuakwa North, Joseph Bwachidankwa Etu, has been remanded into police custody for further investigation by an Accra District Magistrate Court. The unemployed 19-year-old accused, Daniel Isiedu, was not legally represented in court. He has been charged with murder and his plea was not taken. The MP was last Tuesday murdered in his home at Shiashi near East Lagon in Accra. We bring you a report by Yvonne Asari-Ofe.
According to the prosecutor, Superintendent Francis Barr, the deceased arrived in his home about 11:40 p.m. and retired to bed in his room located upstairs. At about 1 a.m., the accused, who was armed with a catapult, a cutter, and a sharp knife, entered the house of the late MP through an iron fence gate at the blind side of the security man, who was fast asleep. Esiedu allegedly picked a ladder in the house and climbed to the porch of the top floor and entered the bedroom through the window while the deceased was sleeping. He allegedly began to search the room, but the late MP woke up and held him, so he stabbed him on his right chest above the breast. Mr. Bwachidankwa held the knife and shouted for help, but no one came to his rescue. Esiedu also sustained deep cuts in his palm when he attempted to pull the knife from the MP's hands. The deceased, who was then bleeding profusely, fell by his bed helplessly, and Asiedu stabbed him again on the right chest below the breast. Realizing that the MP was almost dead, Asiedu allegedly took away his two phones and a tablet and left him to his fate. He managed to escape by descending from the top to the back of the house and climbed one of the polytanks in the house and jumped over the electric fence into the adjoining house. Daniel Asiedu is to reappear on the 6th of next month.
Yvonne Asari-Ofe reporting. The leader and founder of All People's Congress, APC, Hassan Ayariga, has appealed to the EC to work expeditiously to grant the party its final certificate. He said if the party is granted the final certificate, it will organize its Congress in March to elect party executives and flag bearer. Addressing a news conference in Accra, Mr. Ayariga said Ghanaians are tired of the NDC and NPP since his decision to form the APC.
Hence his decision to form the APC. He noted that APC, which will stand for All Inclusive Governance, will shake up Ghana's politics and invited the youth to be part of history in the making. Brighton Trauma has more.
Hassan Ayariga was the 2012 presidential candidate for the PNC until he broke away from the party when he lost his flag brushy bid to lead the PNC in 2016. Mr. Ayariga, after the PNC Congress, made it clear that he was going to form his own party, the APC, which has green, white and yellow as its colors and a broom as its emblem, believes in all-inclusive governance. The APC has been given a provisional license to operate as a political party. The leader and founder of the APC, Hassan Ayariga, asked the EC to speed up the process of granting the party the final certificate. He said, so far, the party has over 150 district officers and has all it takes to become a fully-fledged political party.
I want to thank the Electoral Commission for granting us this provisional certificate. We pray that the EC will look through our application expeditiously and grant us the final certificate as time is not on our side. We are confident that a meticulous job was done in compiling our data in fulfillment of the provision of the EC. And we are also confident in the credibility of the EC to grant us the final certificate to operate as a full-fledged political party. Ladies and gentlemen, I, Dr. Hassan Ayariga, and my team of selfless and committed men and women in the APC are here today with one assurance. We believe in you, we believe in Ghana, and that given the final certificate and the chance, we will turn things around, and together we shall help build Mother Ghana. It's the first party in the history of Ghana to be formed within 1 month, and it's also the first party in the history of Ghana to be formed with 150 district officers. I don't think there's any party today in Ghana that can boast of what our structures have. Not even the NDC and the MPP has one human.
Joyce Chechi
reports. Mr. Ayariga said the APC was formed to ameliorate the suffering of Ghanaians. He noted that both the NDC and MPP have failed Ghanaians and that the APC is for all Ghanaians irrespective of political persuasions or religious affiliations.
If you are tired of voting and not believing in the system, now a new platform is being created for every Ghanaian to believe this is where I belong to, irrespective of religious background and where you are coming from. What we need is an opportunity and a platform to give every Ghanaian the chance, at least the chance to serve our land. We don't get it from the NDC, and we don't also get it from the MPP, and they are all the same. So we are saying, let's forget them. Let's create a platform that everybody, any Ghanaian who believes that he has the talent, the ideas, the vision, the opportunity, come on board.
That was Hassan Ayariga, leader of the All People's Congress, ending the report by Bright in Trauma. In foreign news, Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta says he will set up a new special prison for violent offenders. The facility, according to him, would prevent jihadists from spreading their extremist ideology to the rest of the society. Former French President Nicolas Sarkozy has been placed under formal investigation in a probe into his campaign funding. It relates to spending in his unsuccessful 2012 bid for re-election, when his campaign costs were more than twice the legal limit. Mr. Sarkozy, 61, was questioned all day yesterday by magistrates before being informed he was under investigation. The Canadian government has confirmed the number of missing or murdered Indigenous women in the country may be higher than the previously cited 1,200. Ministers recently spoke to survivors across Canada to begin a government inquiry into the matter. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau made a key campaign pledge to address this. Canada's Minister for the Status of Women suggested the accurate number of missing and murdered women could be as high as 4,000. And now to end the news, the main points again. Members of Parliament say they are disappointed about how the Ghana Water Company has handled the management of water at the Nsawam treatment plant. They expressed a concern when the Committee on Water Resources, Works and Housing paid a working visit to the area. The Executive Director of Child Rights International, Bright Appiah, asked journalists to desist from posting